candidate Paul Vallis just took a seat. Paul, it is good to see you. I'm not even letting you catch your breath here, kind of.
That's quite all right. Thanks for having me.
Well, when you're mayor, you won't have a problem finding parking at all, right?
Probably not.
No. And that's something. We could start right there, actually. So I just came in from out of town. I haven't talked about this, but and the show's not about me. It really doesn't much matter. I was at a conference. I was speaking at that conference for a couple of days. The only way to go from Gainesville to Chicago directly is to go through Orlando or Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
So I chose to go through Jacksonville. That's only about an hour away. I took an Uber ride there and then took a plane. United Airlines, thank you very much. Got me up here on time, bright and early, well before the program. Why am I telling you that? Oh, because the Uber driver from the airport to my home in Chicago was telling me, oh my gosh, the roads over the past couple of years, they have disintegrated.
They have.
And I am tired of paying for I just want to run in for coffee. It costs me more for parking than it does for the coffee. So I said, I know someone who may fix that, or at least has been talking about that. So really, two of the topics not talked about that I've heard in the mayoral race, and we'll get to crime, and we'll get to some of the other topics you'd expect us to talk about, but infrastructure, the roads, it was a tough winter, but the roads are in terrible shape, and also the city doesn't look as beautiful as Chicago once looked, and what about the parking meters?
Well, look, let me tell you, pretty soon it becomes counterproductive to simply levy more taxes and fees and taxes and fees because you pointed out, I mean, how does somebody working on a fixed income or even someone middle income or upper middle income family deal with the fact that between traveling downtown, for example, if you're working downtown, getting monthly parking, if you're fortunate enough to get monthly parking and not pay the daily rate, where after like 2 hours you're paying $50.
Yeah.
I mean, just and then, of course, there's the fines and the fees and the penalties. It's just absolutely atrocious. Now, you would think that the city would really be investing in making sure that its mass transit system is top-notch, not only from an infrastructure standpoint, but from a public safety standpoint. But isn't it ironic that, the CTA is hiring private security guards, who are not armed, by the way, to protect us, and there's countless videos of them sitting around looking at their cell phones or standing by while somebody's getting pummeled or sometimes walking away. Well, at the same time, they're making it more expensive for us to drive our cars. The case in point is lowering the speed limit, speed camera limit, mm-hmm. from 10 miles per hour to 6 miles per hour. Last year, they wrote 2.8 million tickets. That's more tickets than we have residents. So
what are we doing with all that money? And I'm asking you 40 questions at once, and I apologize for that. What are they doing with all that money? But you didn't answer about the parking meters.
Well, the parking meters, first of all, I'm of the belief that you need to provide affordable parking places, not only for residents, but for businesses. And this idea that we're simply taxing and fining people to death when it comes to the not only the parking meters, but
you
when
be
it also
able to
talks
get
about
out of
the
that,
parking garages.
But
if you're asking specifically on whether or not you can get out of the parking meter contract, I mean, that's a good question. I would certainly explore that. Because I think Franz Spielman has done a number of articles that talks about the fact that the companies that invested in the parking meter deal have now realized the return that exceeds what they ultimately paid. And, of course, we're going to continue. That deal is going to continue to go on for another 60 to 70 years. I think at the very least it should be challenged. And I also think at the very least that the city should be exploring, should be evaluating and assessing its parking infrastructure to perhaps create more spaces where people don't have to pay. I mean, at the end of the day, are we getting any money from the parking meters? No. Basically, this other company is. These other investors are. In fact, the Chicago Teachers Retirement System is one of the beneficiaries of the parking meter deal.
Really?
Because they are invested, okay? Not our pension system, right? The Texas Teachers Retirement System were one of the investors
what?
In the parking meter
okay,
deal.
I want to make that clear. So we're helping out the Texas teachers, but not CPS?
Yeah, technically, indirectly, yeah, you are. Because the company that gobbled up, one of the investors were the Texas Teacher Retirement System.
Oh, that's great. I had no idea. All right.
But I think two things really quick. I think we need to explore a legal challenge, and we need to rethink parking and the availability of parking spaces. Now, look, I'm all for mass transit, and clearly we have got to...
I'll ask you about that.
We have to have a mass transit system that's accessible to everybody in the city, but you're not going to increase mass transit ridership unless you can control costs and unless people know that the transit system is safe. And there's been a significant increase in crime on the mass transit. It's been well documented. There's been articles about it, and you need to attack that problem too.
What are you going to do? How do you attack the problem?
Well, from a public safety standpoint, I would put police officers on platforms,
and do we have enough police?
Well, you need to fill vacancies. You need to prioritize hiring police and deploying them to the platforms, and you really need to select and train police so that they become part of a Chicago Police Department mass transit unit. Now, they'll tell you that they have such a unit, but is it really a real unit? And do they have enough resources? But you need police officers to be walking those platforms, and you also need undercover police officers who can ride the trains so that they can, so that individuals who board the trains and are thinking of mayhem or assault or whatever will know that there is a good chance that there's a Chicago police officer sitting in that seat, or walking up and down the car. So I think prioritizing establishing a real police presence will improve ridership, which in turn improves, generates more income to the Chicago Transit Authority, and at the same time generates more economic activity and saves city residents money because they won't have to bring their cars downtown. They won't have to spend $50 a day parking. They won't have to risk running a red light camera or, for that matter, a speed camera or parking or not filling the meter fast enough to avoid getting hit with those major fines.
Or getting your car carjacked. which is another topic.
Yeah.
So right now, it is a huge issue in Chicago. I mean, we had someone, Anthony Beal, the alderman, was on the show either last week or the week before. I don't recall. And he said, I think it was last week, and he said some of the same things you're saying. And a caller called in and said, you know what? I used to drive downtown for work all the time, but now I can if I want work remotely. My bosses want me to come in, but here's the problem. I could take public transportation, but I am hugely concerned about my safety. I don't want to drive in because I'm hugely concerned about the cost of parking, which has gone up since, at least where he parks, since before the pandemic. And I don't want to be carjacked, which I'm actually concerned about because I get off work late at night. So now that person, and there are many like that person, isn't coming downtown.
Well, look, the bottom line is the last 2 years, and it really even began before George Floyd, well before that, there has really been this campaign to in effect impair the police department's ability to be proactive. And you see it in what they have the police department occupying their time with, like these positive community interactions where they're supposed to, where they have a quota, where they have to have some positive interaction with the public rather than going out and actually making arrests for the lower level crimes. You see it in the way Fox prosecutes or elects not to prosecute. I mean, how many carjacking arrests actually result in prosecution and serious consequences? You have to ask yourself, let alone violations of the public way. I mean, you saw the footage of the police cars getting attacked.
Yes.
Just over the 4th of July weekend.
Yes.
It looked like something out of Apocalypse Now, right? That
sort
scene
of,
in
yeah,
Apocalypse
yeah.
Now. And I was talking to the police department, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I think they made three arrests. I mean, they made three arrests. I mean, there are just no consequences.
The people, to my knowledge, the people arrested were only misdemeanors, and they were out. I could go through a red light camera and get in more trouble than they did.
They had six. They had three shootings and three stabbings after the Pride parade.
Right.
Right. And
Kim Fox said, "You're out."
And they arrested everybody.
Yep.
I mean, they arrested the people who committed the crimes.
Police did their job.
Only one was charged, and that person was charged with a misdemeanor. Think about that.
Yep.
So the bottom line is, for heaven's sakes, people, you know, people say, well, you'll have some who say that, well, the police aren't making enough arrests. The police arrest rate, the clearance rate is low. And it is. And the mayor lies about the clearance rate all the time. She says, we have record numbers of cases cleared. But what she doesn't tell you is half the number of cases that they list as cleared actually don't result in anyone being arrested. Because they don't have a witness or whatever, they just wipe the case out. But the point that I want to make, though, is on any given day, well over 80% and probably closer to 90% of the criminals who have committed the most serious offenses combined, I'm talking about murders, I'm talking about shootings, mm-hmm. are on the street. And they're on the street because the police only clear less than a third of the murder cases. The police only clear about 5% of the shooting cases. Fox doesn't prosecute in many, many cases.
Yep.
She doesn't prosecute at a rate far in excess of her predecessor. And 75% of the individuals who commit even violent felonies end up getting parole.
All right,
being put out on felony bail.
A lot there to follow up on. We're talking to Paul Vallis. He is a mayoral candidate. And my gosh, our phone number is 312-981-7200. Right here, right now, is Chicago mayoral candidate Paul Vallis. And we were talking about Kim Fox, our state's attorney, that's her title. But I think that she, almost from day one, her first term, has been more like a public defender in some ways.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe her. And she really is like a public defender. And she does she really believe in what she's doing in terms of, you know, it's almost like, well, first of all, for the low-level crimes, they're not even prosecuting, and obviously even for some of the more serious crimes, the standard of that they're demanding when it comes to evidence, they seem to be releasing or not, electing not to prosecute for the more serious crimes at a much higher rate than they did under Alvarez. So clearly, she is acting more as a public defender.
So one texter is asking, do you fire her? You can't, can
you? Well, you can't fire her, and unfortunately—
Explain why. Because
we can't recall. The state statutes do not really provide for a recall provision. And for that matter, neither does, when it comes to like the mayor, you can't recall people who get elected in the city either. I'll tell you what you have to do with Kim Fox. First of all, if I were mayor, I would create a judicial review unit that would monitor every decision coming out of her office to prosecute, not to prosecute, or for that matter, any actions that the judge takes to draw attention to when they're releasing people on felony bail who have long track records.
Because, and some of the individual aldermen are doing that.
Well, they've talked about that. They've talked about doing that, but no one's introduced an ordinance to do that.
No, not an ordinance.
But if you created that entity could also help decide when to bypass her and to go straight to a judge to get them to force her to charge. And that can be done.
The problem with that is a lot of the judges have been no better.
Yeah, but there's been instances where the judges have, in fact, bypassed her. There was one celebrated instance where these two little girls were shot and one was killed, and she elected not to prosecute. And the detective, the division commander, actually bypassed her. And then Brown, in turn, circumvented his own division commander by going to another judge to basically block that from being done, despite all the mayor's rhetoric and complaints about Fox. Of course, that division commander, that detective commander, resigned, and I think he went to be a superintendent of police. I think maybe it's in Grand Rapids on the show.
So is that why? There are a lot of reasons why we're losing police, and police are leaving all over the country. It's not only Chicago. However, is Superintendent Brown one of those reasons? And when you're mayor, what happens to the superintendent?
Well, day one, I fire Brown, and I replace his entire leadership team, period. He's a catastrophe. When you lose 1,600 police officers in 18 months, and you're only able to replace maybe 20% of them, it means that the rank-and-file police officers have lost confidence in the leadership, and they've lost confidence in his strategy. They've lost confidence in his management. And, you know, you've got police working 10, 12, 15, some 30 consecutive days
and
without a day off.
And what did the mayor say about that? She said, and I'm paraphrasing, not quoting, they have plenty of time off.
Yeah, well, you know, she's either delusional or lying. You can pick. The bottom line is they don't. They have plenty of time off by contract that they're entitled to that they are not given. This is not about not having time off in the contract. It's about not letting them take the time off. And if you look at the fact that I think the suicide rates among police officers in Chicago are 60% higher than the national average, and there were, we suffered another tragedy of a young officer committing suicide, or the fact that these police officers are exhausted, that because not only are they working sometimes 10, 12, 15 days in a row, but some of them work as almost like 30 days in a row. But then very often they're on 12-hour shifts, and it's having a destructive – first of all, it's rendering them less and less effective because all you're getting is exhausted, tired police officers who are already restricted in their ability to be proactive. So they can't be as engaged as they need to be to get violent criminals off the street. And that's part of the reason that you have a 70% reduction in arrests. Now, we've had this historic increase in crime the last 2 years, yet we've had a historic decrease in the number of people being arrested. So Chicago's becoming increasingly more dangerous because we've significantly degraded our police department. And it's not going to change until Brown and his leadership team are replaced.
So in you used to run the Board of Education here. So in, I'm afraid to say this, 45 seconds or less, what would you do first as far as the Chicago Public Schools?
Well, as you know, I believe in school choice. The school district just passed $9.4 billion budget. They're spending $28,000 a kid and $28,000 a child. And the overwhelming vast majority of parents are stuck with their children attending, failing, or close to failing schools. You've got to provide parents with 100% school choice, and you've got to reprioritize how the money is being spent and allocated, because only about 60% of the money that goes to the Chicago Public Schools actually finds its way into classroom instruction. The majority of that money is being diverted for other reasons.
Does the city have more money? I was just told we have one less commercial, so I can ask you one more question. Does the city actually have more money than the mayor cries poor? Because of the pandemic, we did receive federal money. Are we poor?
Well, look, the mayor controls $28 billion in spending because she controls so many other agencies besides just the Chicago Public Schools. So with $28 billion in annual expenditures, we can do a lot better to hold the line on taxes and fines and fees, and we can also do a lot better to provide the services that our citizens need. And it doesn't have to be either or. You know, you can have a fully equipped, supported police department with all those 1,600, 1,700 vacancies filled, and you can still have enough money and resources to make the type of investments in the community, the type of investments that leave no communities behind. Our fundamental problem is there's just an absence of leadership because we're being run by a mayor who does not have a vision, a real vision, someone who doesn't know how to manage, and someone who doesn't have the courage to make the tough decisions. And I'll point as a case in point, the literal caving to the Chicago Teachers Union three consecutive times to keep schools closed for 15 consecutive months with catastrophic consequences. And there's a reason that last year almost 9% of the murders and 9% of the shootings and well over 50% of the carjackings were committed by school-age children, by teenagers. You know, so we've literally recruited a whole generation of criminals that we're now going to have to find a way to reclaim. So at the end of the day, Chicago has a crisis in leadership, and because of the lack of leadership, we have the most expensive city to live in, perhaps in the country, and yet we have one of the worst school systems, and we are really the most violent big city in the United States.
Hmm. And it's all a shame, you know? And people who live here, I don't think would argue with what you say. Paul Vallis, it's always good to have you in the studio. It's good to see you. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. Just remember, it does not have to be this way. It does not have to be this way. There are solutions. There are avenues. And I've certainly, the last 3 or 4 years, painstakingly
articulated
what they are.
And people should, by the way, follow you on Twitter and elsewhere in social media.
On my Facebook, I'm Paul Vallis.
Yeah, because you do write out in great detail, page after page. But it's very thoughtful of what you would do. Agree or disagree with Paul Vallis, he does think about things and write them all out for all of you to see. We'll be back next week, 1 to 3, here on WGN.